The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We are doing that. Oh boy, here we go again. We're doing that on today is my Friday. It's Friday morning in Tokyo. It's Thursday night with Tim Bontemps in Boston, right?
Shouldn't be that hard to figure this out at this point.
You know what? Save it. And joining us from the West Coast, where it's Thursday afternoon, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
It's not as simple as you may think, at least not for me. So my last night, your guys earlier today, Team USA, with a big win over Australia. And by the way, before I start that, I should tell you that this Olympic update is brought to you by CarMax. If it's time to sell your car, go for sold with an instant offer from CarMax. Find out what your car is worth with an instant offer at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way it should be. The way it should be is Team USA in the gold medal game after beating Australia. And for people who woke up on Thursday and saw, they won by 20. Durant had 23. Sounds like a routine game. I suppose that's, you go on with your day and not think twice about it. But it was not a routine game. They were down 15 points in the first half, and everything was going Australia's way. Team USA was screwing up on defense. They were struggling to get into their offense. There was a couple of ridiculous plays. Chris Middleton blew a wide open dunk. I mean, wide open. And then went down and stupidly fouled the three-point shooter. And there was another play where Jason Tatum took a ridiculous long three-pointer early in the shot clock and then went down and made a stupid foul. Like, just those 2 points, just those two alone were like a 10-point swing. And it was like, I wasn't like saying, boy, they're in real trouble, but they were in trouble. And then Kevin Durant was like, all right, guys, I'll take over from here. And he and Drew Holiday defensively and offensive creation, and Durant just sticking his head down and getting a couple of big baskets, started a 20-0 run, and the rest was history. And so they're in the gold medal game against France in a rematch. And France beat Luka Doncic and Slovenia in the last 10 seconds, last second of the game, really Nick Batum with a block shot that got, that protected France's 1-point win. They had a guy had a layup at the rim. Doncic had fed him. They had gotten Gobert out of the lane. Gobert was on Doncic on a switch. Luka backed him out of the lane and then went to his teammate. And Batum recovered and blocked. Great block over his back, totally clean right at the buzzer. And they win the game. So France-USA rematch. Bontemps, I know that Durant's numbers aren't, he's only averaging 20 points a game. His numbers in Rio were like even better than this, but Greg Popovich and the Team USA should be thankful every day that Durant decided to play here. He's absolutely carrying them.
Yeah. I mean, like you wrote in your story after the game, Team USA went to the two guys, they have Draymond Green's also won a ring, but they went to the two guys who have rings on the team.
So it was Chris Middleton. Durant.
That's true. Chris Middleton too, but they went to Kevin Durant and Drew Holiday to carry them home. And those two guys have been the guys that have carried them all the way through. We kept saying when this team was in Las Vegas, they're going to get Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday and Devin Booker in Tokyo, and things are going to look a lot different. And you correctly at the time said, well, let's wait and see if they actually show up. They're coming off playing in the playoffs. We'll see if they actually want to commit to this team and make the trip. And to your point, thank God for Team USA's sake that they did, because those three guys have been in what, the top seven spots in Greg Popovich's rotation.
Well, I mean, Booker and Holiday are starting, and then Booker had 20 in this game.
They're starting, and Middleton's playing a ton. I mean, they've been right. Critical pieces for them. And Drew Holiday has been every bit as good, if not better, than he was in the playoffs for the Bucks.
For sure.
And leading them to the title. I mean, his numbers don't always look great. He can sometimes be erratic on offense, but his size and physicality at both ends of the court is just hugely impactful. Even when he's not scoring, he's people don't really see it seeing him on TV, but he's built like a linebacker. I mean, he's a big physical guy, And on offense, he's able to get wherever he wants on the court. And on defense, he makes it impossible for guys to get around. Guys sometimes will score on him, but they have to work for every second they're on the court. And, you know, that impact at both ends of the court has been absolutely huge. And you're right. Kevin Durant is the best player in this tournament. No offense to Luka Doncic, who is going to take that mantle someday soon, as far as probably being the best player on the planet, or at least one of the top couple guys. But Kevin Durant is still a level above him. And, you know, like you said, whenever Team USA has needed to turn something around in this tournament, it's been pretty simple. It's been give Kevin the ball and get out of the way. And it's worked out really well for them.
Yeah, and nobody would have blinked if Durant didn't play. I mean, a guy who has, you know, he's been there, done that with Team USA, won championships, Olympics, NBA, you know, went deep into his career, had the Achilles injury. Like, he had every reason.
Played a trillion minutes, right, against the Bucks, right?
Yeah, averaged 66 minutes a game or whatever it was.
Right.
Like, he had every reason to say, you know what, I'm good. I'm going to enjoy my summer. I'll pass. And, you know, not only has he played, but he's been Captain America.
Yeah. And not only that, but there have been times where this team's system, it's a loose system at best, has completely broken down. And so there are times also when they move the ball beautifully, and the ball makes four passes and finds a spot up 3-point shooter who knocks it down. There are times where they move it around, a guy will cut back door and it's a dunk. But there's when they went under pressure, they've sort of just frozen up, like it happens in basketball. And, you know, it's the greatest advantage you could possibly imagine to have a guy like that in that situation.
Yeah. They also don't have a natural distributor on this team either. They've got a lot of combo guards like Jrue Holiday. I mean, even Dame Lillard, Durant, like all these guys are solid passers, but none of them are guys that are typical set it up and distribute for others.
They don't have Chris Paul.
Well, or Kyle Lowry, or, you know, anybody like that. Like, they don't have a pure point on the team. They've got a ton of awesome players.
They don't have Luka Doncic dishing out 18 assists and almost 19 that would have been the game winner.
Nope.
So, yeah, well, Jrue Holiday did have 8 assists in the game, and he had a couple of great passes. At one time, he got into the lane, drew some people, and kicked it like sort of like a backhand pass to Booker, who had a 3 in the first half that was really an important shot. But, you know, Holiday, they were really good on Patty Mills. Patty Mills, who has averaged in the last two games the Australians played the U.S. and won, Patty was averaging 25 in those games. He's played in 4 Olympics and he's averaged like 20 points a game in his Olympic career. So this is a guy who scores, and he drew 3 fouls. He drew 3 fouls in the first like 5 minutes of the game, and you know, was off to a good start. And then Drew really it was a group effort, but Drew really shut him down. He had 15, but he had like 3 or 4 baskets when the game was already decided. So and he was really upset after the game because he knows this is probably his last chance, you know, for him to beat the U.S. And you know, he's playing against Popovich, and he was teary-eyed. And Pop said after the game that he felt really good about the win. Then he got to Patty, who just signed with the Nets after 10 years with the Spurs, and he said I saw Patty's eyes and I felt bad, because you know, all these Australian players, you know, 7 of them or 8 of them are NBA players.
Well, and as you pointed out in your story before this game, Brian, for people that aren't like avid international basketball fans, Australia's been in the semifinals of many tournaments, both in the Olympics and the World Championships, and they finished 4th several times and have never won a medal in either. And these guys in particular have finished 4th in several tournaments now. This group, Joe Ingles and Patty Mills, and you know, this whole Aaron Baines, who was hurt for this game, this whole crew of international NBA players from Australia in this group has been deep into these tournaments time after time after time, only to come up short. Because if you lose in the semifinals, then you play in the bronze medal game. And if you lose that, you finish 4th. And they finished 4th several times. And now they're going to have 4 their hands times. Full. Right. 4 and times. And they're going to have their hands full finishing above to not finish 4th a 5th time, because they're going up against Luka in this bronze medal game. And
the bronze medal game, is going to be fascinating. Because, you know, just what you mentioned, this Australian team that has been very good for very long but doesn't have the medal to show for it. And then Slovenia, which this is their first bite at the Olympics apple. You know, they won Eurobasket a couple of years back. A few, I guess it was, what, 4 years back? But yeah, first bite at the Olympic apple. Yesterday was the first time Luka Doncic had ever lost a game wearing the Slovenian national team uniform. Now 17-1. You know, I saw some people, well, why didn't Luka take the shot? Well, first of all, he was doubled. Batum basically came over to double him. It wasn't like in a, you know, all the way double, but he, if Luka puts that ball on the floor, Batum is on him. As you mentioned, Wendy, he had Rudy away from the rim. He was 5 of 18 from the floor with 18 assists and one turnover. Yeah, I like Luka giving the ball up to the guy that Batum had come off of, who then gets to the rim for a layup, and give Batum credit for making.
Made a hell of a play.
I don't know. I can't say I'm that well versed in the history of the French national team, but maybe the best defensive play in the history of that program.
Yeah. So Slovenia won Eurobasket, which some people regard as the second toughest tournament to win after the Olympics. Now, some people will say, well, what about the World Cup? Yes, but in Eurobasket, every single game just about is a grinder.
Yeah, I would say regardless, Eurobasket's tougher personally.
Okay, so winning that was a huge thing. Luka was like 17 at the time. Okay, so that was
Goran Dragic was the MVP, but Luka was, you know, that's when everybody knew. I mean, Luka was a big name before then, but that was like, okay, there's no question this guy's a future NBA 100%. Star.
100%. Right. So they win that, and then they have to. They didn't qualify for the Olympics before this summer. So, like, they had to go qualify. And, like, this is where, like, Jokic was too exhausted, and he just asked, you know, he's like, hey, I can't play for Serbia. Serbia is probably the second best team in the world when everybody's got all their dudes.
Yeah.
And so Serbia didn't qualify, but Slovenia went into Lithuania. They had to, you know, Lithuania has a very storied basketball history, crazy rabid fans. And, you know, Sabonis was playing.
Jonas Valanciunas.
And yeah, Valanciunas played. Yeah. And, you know, Lithuania was absolutely expecting to win that tournament.
Yeah, and Slovenia, the only other NBA player on the roster, Goran Dragic isn't playing. His brother is Zoran, but not Goran.
Yeah.
The only other NBA player on the roster is Vlatko Čančar.
Right, who's barely an NBA.
Which NBA we'll player. See if he continues to be an NBA player. There are some Mavs fans that want this guy, Mike Toby, Luka's primary pick and roll partner, to be an NBA player, but we'll see about that.
It was really watching Luka play in this tournament. It was just surgical. Like, whatever, you know, he's still got a game left, but whatever teams would throw at him, he would just, you know, you want to come this way? Well, I'm going to go that way. You're going to come from this side? I'm going to go to that side. You're going to double from here? Well, I know exactly where to go. And he and Mike Toby, who I think is, he played at University of Loyola Chicago, I believe.
Yeah. And I think he's American, and it's so one of these, got his Slovenian passport.
Yeah, I think you replaced Anthony Randolph on the team. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those situations.
Yeah. So anyway,
well, one thing to remember about Luka is he's played more FIBA ball than he has NBA ball, right? Like, FIBA ball is basically what the European style is. And he played for years at Real Madrid before he came to the NBA. And he's obviously played all this time for Slovenia in the summer. So this is, for as good as he is in the NBA, I would probably say a more comfortable place for him still in terms of understanding every part of the game and how it works and where his teammates are going to be and how to bend defenses and stuff. And it's, he's just been masterful in this tournament.
You know what's a comfortable place for Luka?
Yelling at the officials?
Well, that too. He's done a lot of that. A big stage is a comfortable place for Luka. I mean, you've seen what he has not won a playoff series, but it ain't because of what he's been doing. You know, when you go 46-14 in game 7, it ain't on you. When you have a 43-point triple-double that includes a buzzer beater to win, you know, I mean, this guy, he's been just absolute. Obviously, the majority of his NBA career has been ridiculous. The playoffs has been even better. His Olympics debut, you mentioned what he had to do just to get there. His Olympics debut, 48 points. What was that? Was that the second highest scoring game in Olympic second history.
Oscar Schmidt.
And then I'm reading Tim Reynolds' tweet from last night here. Last night had the third triple double in Olympic men's history. The others, some guy for the Soviet Union in 1976 and LeBron James for the US in 2012. So, I mean, this guy, you know, he's putting up historic numbers in his first taste of the Olympics. And it's not surprising because we've seen what he's done in the NBA as well.
And all that being said, I'm happy France won the game, because for as fun as it would have been for Luka to play the US in the gold medal game, no disrespect to Serbia, I think France is the second best team in the world.
Yeah, no disrespect to Slovenia either. Jeez.
Well, no. Back to what Brian said before. I gotcha. No, Slovenia is, I mean, they've been incredible, but to go back to what Brian said before, I think France is the second best team in the world. They won the last, I believe they won the World Cup, right? Am I right about that?
No,
they had the bronze. Spain won.
They knocked out. They knocked out the U.S., but then Luis Scola got them.
That's
the next
right.
game.
They lost.
Well, Luis Scola had one of the great games of Luis Scola's career, which I know nobody saw. It was in Beijing in the middle of the night, but it was one of the great games of Luis Scola's career.
But I think this France team, you know, they've got 7 or 8 NBA players. They've got NBA length and athleticism. They've got Rudy at the rim. They've already beat Team USA in this tournament. These are the two best.
Fournier, you talk about a guy who is better internationally than he is NBA. Fournier is an absolute star in the international game.
I have to say, being at these games, it is a little bit, it's such a bizarre feeling watching these guys play these super high stakes games, because I'm sitting there thinking during a timeout in the first half yesterday, US is down 15 points. And I'm thinking, you know, for all of Greg Popovich's accomplishments, of which there are very many, if the U.S. loses this game, this will be the worst moment in his coaching career. And it's a Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock in a suburb, because they're playing at it's a big stadium, but it's an hour outside Tokyo. And they're playing in front of, you know, 200 people, you know, in the middle of August. It's like, you know, like Greg Popovich is like, you know, this is a vitally important game for him. It's a bizarre situation, but that's the Olympics. And
under COVID circumstances.
Right. When it comes to France, so, you know, when I say Serbia is, you know, arguably the second best team in the world, that's assuming Bogdan Bogdanovic and, you know, Jokic are playing. You know, they have a great team, and they were awesome in China until they stubbed their toe. I thought they were going to win that World Cup if it wasn't the US. Here's the thing about France. When the US played 2 weeks ago, they only scored 76 points in that game. If you remember, they didn't make a basket in like the last 5 or 6 minutes. Holiday, Booker, and Middleton had arrived at 1 a.m. The game was at 9 p.m. the same day. Popovich started Draymond Green and Bam Adebayo together. Durant got in foul trouble, fouled out in 20 minutes. They switched on to Gobert. He got switched on to Gobert and got two, you know, cheap fouls, just positioning fouls on Gobert in the first quarter, took him out of the flow. You know, the U.S. shot like 36% as a team. The starting lineup was different. Jason Tatum, who's become more of a bench scorer, didn't have that role. So I know it's not that long ago, but it's a completely different situation than it was before. And specifically because Holiday is now settled into that role and Durant is now really going.
France has so much more continuity coming into the Olympics than Team US. I mean, these guys, you know, Gobert's been playing with Fournier since they were kids, you know, Batum,
all these guys.
Yeah, they don't skip tournaments. Like, these guys are fixtures there, and they play every tournament. And I mean, I don't know how many games and minutes they've played together, but it's a ton. And they are on a string. They're connected.
Well, and even after that game, when they beat Team USA, Evan Fournier got interviewed, and the first thing he said was, "Yeah, well, these guys just showed up, and they had three guys get off the plane this morning, and you know, this isn't this isn't a big deal. Like they,
yeah, he basically they fully, said, yeah, great win, but this is pool play. Like
exactly. Right. Yeah. You know. That's exactly what he said. Yeah. There was no celebrating from the French.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is, in that game, because the U.S. was playing big, it enabled the French to play big. They played with two centers, like the whole second half, including Vincent Poirier, who doesn't even play for them normally. Like Poirier, like played the whole second half. So I expect the U.S. to go short and fast. They're going to have trouble on the inside at times. I mean, the French are really good defensively. They are really good defensively at the rim. So when Batum made that block, it was his fourth block of the game, and also Gobert, obviously one of the great rim protectors of this era. He had four blocks. So, you know, the U.S. is really good when they get momentum going to the rim, and sometimes you get frustrated with how many threes they shoot because they are totally hot and cold. I mean, the reason they were down in the first half was because they missed their first 10 three-pointers.
Yep.
They got there was that possession late in the game where they missed, what was it, like five clean looks at a three,
possession. Right. So I do think they're going to end up really needing that 3-point game, but you know, they're equipped to shoot the threes because they're going to have trouble going in there and scoring. And so one of the things that the French do, you know, Nando De Colo is their point guard, and he will come and set a screen, or, you know, Gobert will come up and set a screen and De Colo will go in. In fact, he had 25 against Slovenia. But really what they're looking for is they sneak Fournier around the backside. And this is this has killed Team USA both earlier in this Olympics and then 2 years ago. They lose track of Fournier. And, you know, it's a very basic French move. They start going, you know, the offense collapsed, boom, 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 pass. And guess what? Guess who all of a sudden has the ball in the perimeter, usually on the wing, which is where he likes to shoot from. Wide open, Evan Fournier. He crushed him in China in the World Cup, and he crushed him again here a couple weeks ago. So they have got to have somebody stay attached to Fournier. Don't fall for the French, trap, so to speak, of going into the ball and forgetting where Fournier is. I mean, you can just see him when you watch him. He's just sort of being very sneaky. He's sneaking away from his man. The ball's moving around, and all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, how'd he get open? So, I mean, they've got a lot of data on that. But, you know, they play their game. Durant shows up. I mean, Durant has scored over 30 points in both gold medal games he's played in. You know, in 2012, it was a barn burner against Spain in London. I think it was a 6-point game. Durant scored in the 30s. And then they crushed Serbia in the gold medal game in Rio, but Durant had a 30-point game. So Durant is going to show up. I asked him after the game. I said, you know, because I felt it watching the game, the U.S. was tight. They were getting worried. Mm-hmm. They couldn't make shots. And Durant was just like, let me have the ball. Just hold on, guys. And he made like two really tough, like getting in leaners. Mm-hmm. One he banked in. We just real hard baskets where he just used all of his skill to get it in. And that helped them get over the hump in that first half. And I just said to him, I go, your experience really showed up. I mean, think about it. This guy's got three NBA titles and two gold medals. And he's played just a ton of Olympic, you know, and he's played a ton of FIBA basketball, way more than anybody on this U.S. roster.
Yep.
I just said, I go, your experience really showed up there. And he's like, well, you were looking at me too much. And he's like, maybe you should have been looking at other guys. I was like, well, guess what? You can say however you want to say, you bailed them out. So I don't. I just expect Durant to be awesome. And to be honest with you, he hadn't even really been hot yet. I mean, he's had 3 and 4 minute stretches where he's hit two or three in a row. But Durant hasn't even gone full Durant yet. And you know, I also think if he had to, he could play 38 minutes. They've been able to rest him a little bit.
If he had to, he could play 40.
That stuff makes me so nervous. Like as spectacular as he was to watch in the East semis against the Bucks, like God, his minutes getting up that high with the history.
And you know, he's always falling, always, always, always. He's always falling because, you know, he gets knocked around. He's not that heavy. And so I know, I mean, I'm sure that Nets fans are like, oh my God, he just fell again, but you know, he gets up, he gets up. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that's Team USA France will play for the gold. It's actually an advantageous time. They finally are going to move it to a time when you can watch it. It's going to be on NBC. You can watch it.
Yeah. Bronze game, Slovenia, Australia. You're going to have to work a little bit harder.
10:30 Eastern right. tonight for people who want to watch it on NBC.
10:30 Saturday night.
Wait, when night?
No, Friday night. You're right.
10:30 tonight. But thanks, buddy.
Bontemps, I know that you're right, but I can't keep a track. But I mean, just say in my world, it's hard. It's hard in my world.
Got a rough life. Got a rough life.
You know, normally you make fun of me like that, and you are making a point. But right now, this is rough. What I'm dealing with.
You got a rough life.
Do they have violins in Tokyo?
No,
they don't have enough. They don't have enough violence.
If only I was spending my time in Tokyo. I'm spending my time in Saitama. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. So, okay, so I wanted to move on to NBA free agency. We're mostly done. I really don't know what to say about Kawhi Leonard. We'll talk about that in a minute, but Bontemps had this idea. McMahon, I'm not taking blame or credit for it. He wanted to talk about who we thought, you know, basically I would say about 90% of free agency is over 95. Mm-hmm. Who we thought the winners and losers were.
Yeah, money-wise, it's probably more like 98.
That's true. So, Bontemps, why don't we start it off? Do you want to start off with winners or losers?
I want you to start off with winners because I'm curious because I don't necessarily know that I see like clear-cut. Tell me the teams that just took a leap.
Well, that's the funny thing. The reason I came up with this was I had an executive call me Wednesday night, and the first thing he said was, who are your winners and losers of free agency? And I thought about it, and I didn't really have an answer on the winner side. I mean, I think the Miami Heat are winners because they got Kyle Lowry, and they got PJ Tucker, and they kept Duncan Robinson, and they're going to be really good. Are they going to win a title? I'm not sure, but they got the best player to change teams, and they're going to be, again, assuming something crazy doesn't happen with Kawhi, and they're going to be right there in the East, and you know they're going to be really good. So I think they're winners.
Obviously, their age is a concern, but like if those guys are, you know, healthy, you might be able to beat them in a series, but you will be sore afterwards. I can promise you that.
It's going to be really hard. I mean, you go back to the Heat Bucks series this past year in the first round. If you put Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker on the Heat, and you go up against
with
the Bucks,
Jimmy and Bam.
That's a different series. I mean, they're going to be tough as nails. That's like the ultimate Miami Heat team, right? That's a bunch of grinders, and tough guys, and physical guys. But outside
and then
of the
they've
Heat,
got Robinson spreading the floor. Hero is probably a six man.
Well, to me, let me just say that I think this season is going to really, I don't know about hinge, but what Tyler Hero does is going to be important for the Heat because we know that they're going to be better defensively. We know that Lowry is going to, you know, help them win close games. I mean, this is what he does. And the Heat play a lot of close games. And, but the guy who can elevate them is Hero. And, you know, 2 years ago, we saw Hero do a certain thing. And Bontemps, who lived in that bubble the entire time from start to finish, I'm complaining about my bubble life here in Tokyo. Although I do think you had it a lot better than I did, Bontemps.
I'm surprised you would say that.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Bontemps. People naturally socially distance from him anyway, so it wasn't that different.
Right. He was used to that. But, you know, you were in there for 3 months or something like that, and you believe that there was a shooting bubble that happened within the bubble where the Lakers shot great.
Statistically proven. The people just shot way better than normal in the bubble. You saw that Nuggets Jazz series was crazy scoring. The Lakers guys all shot 10% better. I mean, not all, but a bunch of them shot way above their norms. The Heat, those two teams that made the NBA Finals, the Heat and the Lakers, were both teams that struggled to shoot threes. And in the playoffs, they both shot the lights out from three. And, you know, they were in an environment where their biggest weakness became neutralized, and therefore they both had a lot of success.
And you think that the shooting in the bubble was really good because of the shooting background was just really conducive? And why did everybody shoot so well?
A combination of travel, the background, and consistency. Like, guys were able to just get in a rhythm. Like, there was no travel. They were playing in the same arenas over and over again, the same backgrounds over and over again. Like, I don't think there's a statistical or, like, you know, tangible thing you can 100% define it as, but to me that was what the difference was, because you go back to this season and all those guys who shot really well in the bubble all kind of went back to what they always did, you know, from Jamal Murray to Donovan Mitchell to all these guys. Like, nobody basically carried over what they did there.
Donovan Mitchell kind of did.
Well, that's fair. But the vast majority of guys, I wasn't trying to say that guys like didn't take a step forward. Devin Booker obviously took a step forward. Mitchell took a step forward. But just from a pure shooting perspective, the vast majority of guys kind of reverted back to what they always were. The Lakers are a perfect example of that. They all reverted back to their norms. And all of a sudden, all year long, what were we talking about? They struggled to shoot threes, right? But we're getting a little
also
far.
But my point is, there was no extracurricular activities. You know,
Tyler Hero was playing.
Take your legs away.
Well, maybe. Chelsea for Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero was a star in the bubble. Was a star, and then this last season,
Tyler Hero was not available in discussions for James Harden.
Someone said Tyler Hero was better than LaMelo Ball.
That's not what I said.
Oh, he did not say you did. He did not say you did.
That's not what I said.
You got a guilty conscience?
The question was, you know, who would you value more in trade? And I said Hero. This is the start of last season.
What sayeth you
and,
now?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying Hero anymore. So I'm saying,
okay, Tyler Hero or LiAngelo Ball.
So, you know, I mean, how you can walk away from that first that performance in the bubble and not think that Tyler Hero was not, you know, a potentially big time.
You weren't the only one.
So to me, when it comes to the Heat, the variance on what Hero is, maybe he's, you know, he's not that guy we saw in the bubble, but is he the guy from last year? Now, he had a neck injury like all year long. His neck was bothering him all year long. And then he came to Team USA, was on the select team, and he skipped the last like day or so of practice, maybe the last 2 days of practice. They didn't announce why. They didn't announce any injuries, but that select team was all banged up. And I was told that he was having a neck issue again, but I don't know if it was just a way to end his time early and they said it was a neck thing or he actually re-aggravated it. I don't know, but you know, he's obviously got to get healthy. But so to me, if Hero is more rookie Hero, then that changes the upside for the Heat.
Well, they've got a really thin team. So they've got a really thin team. So they need him to be good. But
they are going to be a prime buyout destination. You know that.
They will be. No, for sure they will be. But the interesting thing is, okay, so you take Miami. Miami's a winner. I don't think there's another, to your point, Tim, at the beginning about teams that really took a leap forward. I don't think there's another team that's a clear winner. I was just going to say the two teams that I think are in the conversation for, and I think are winners, but not dramatically so, are the Wizards and the Knicks. I thought the Wizards moving on from Russell Westbrook, getting a bunch of NBA rotation players, getting Corey Kispert in the first round, who I think is going to be able to walk in and immediately be a floor spacing three-point shooter for them, and just building a more conducive environment for these young players where they're going to be able to have the ball and do stuff and grow as a team, on top of getting Spencer Dinwiddie, who I frankly think will probably at least replicate, if he's healthy, what Russell Westbrook did last year from an overall contribution standpoint.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, remember, Westbrook had a really good second half.
Yeah.
Westbrook, I think if you look at his overall numbers,
yeah,
I agree, for the whole season.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, overall for the whole season.
All right.
He was very bad at the beginning, and then he got better later on, which is fine. He wasn't bad. I'm not saying Westbrook was awful for them, but Spencer Dinwiddie's pretty good. And they got four.
He's NBA coming off rotation. A torn ACL.
I said if he's healthy.
Okay.
The Wizards got a lot more payroll flexibility. They got a lot deeper, and they got another couple interesting young guys to add to their team. I think they improved their short and long term outlook this summer. And I think the Knicks, because of the deals they signed, as we've gotten a little more information about them, the fact that these deals are fairly short term, so there's not a lot of long term risk, and the fact that they got Kemba Walker for a mid-level deal, basically, is a huge win for them. And the combination of him and Evan Fournier, who we've talked about a bunch on this pod already, they go a long way towards addressing the Knicks' biggest issue, which we saw in that first-round series against the Atlanta Hawks, which was they had Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett and nobody else who you could really count on to score.
Well, now they Derrick Rose was their most consistent player in the playoffs.
That's fair. Rose was consistent. But now they have two good shooters in the backcourt who are quality NBA scorers, who are 15 to 20 point a game guys and are good players. And you add them into the mix they already had.
And they're shooters. That's what they really didn't have. They didn't have shooters.
Yep.
What do we think of the Bulls? The Bulls were very
Real quick on the Knicks. One thing I'll say about the Knicks that I think is important. Once you realize that all these contracts they signed were, you know, their team options in all the last years, you look at that and you say all of those contracts probably are assets.
Right.
And you know, I have this rule, and it's not an ironclad rule. There's some gray area. I evaluate a contract. If when you sign it, I ask the question, can you trade it? If you had to trade it tomorrow, could you trade it tomorrow?
They could trade all five of those contracts to your
point. That's right. And they've got a
lot of picks.
And even the Julius Randle signing, I know that it was reported at $117 million. But just like those other contracts, that's really not that much. He's got a lot of incentives in there. It's really like, and by the way, it's not because of negotiating. It's because that he could only sign for so much based on his contract.
He had incentives in his last deal to carry over.
Yes, that's right. So I talked about this with Zach LaVine. The most Zach LaVine could sign for in an extension right now is about $104, $105 million over 4 years. That's what Randle basically signed for. There are incentives in there. And by the way, he may hit those incentives. He just did hit a couple of incentives for a couple of seven-figure paydays. But that contract, its base salary averages about $25, $26 a year. So even Randle, not that they're thinking about trading him, but if he has another all-star season a year from now, he's an all-star on a reasonable contract. So all of those contracts are assets. So even though the Knicks will remain competitive, should there be a moment where they have to pivot, where a star says, I want to go there, they would be able to maneuver that roster.
Maybe a guy with like a huge shoe contract playing for a small market team that either hasn't been able to break through or, you know, is just kind of restless on his rookie deal even and wants to get to the playoffs.
Well, yeah, well, maybe we'll get to them in a minute. All right. You mentioned the Bulls, McMahon.
Yeah. What do we think of the Bulls? They were busy. I like the Lonzo deal. I honestly didn't understand why the Pelicans were so determined not to keep Lonzo. DeRozan on that team for that money to me, and Caruso, I see. Look, Caruso is going to guard people.
That was a good value contract.
Right. That's where, like, the DeRozan thing, like, man, you got LaVine, you got Vooch. To add another essentially one-way player, and DeRozan's a very good offensive player. We can talk about, oh, three-point shooting lack there, whatever. He gets buckets, and, you know, especially last year in San Antonio, showed he's a pretty damn good facilitator too. But, man, they're going to have to score 130 points to win a lot of games.
The Bulls, on the first night of free agency, were a clear winner. By today, they are clear losers. That DeMar DeRozan trade was an absolute disaster. It was they paid him $28 million a year. Not to your point, McMahon. DeMar's a good player. But when they signed him to that contract, no one had cap space. No one. So they paid him maybe market rate, probably more than market rate, and they had no competition for his services.
Well, I was going to say, are you bidding against the Clippers tax?
Well, they had competition, but not competition that could pay him.
Right. That's the thing. How scared were they of the Clippers signing him for what, 20 some odd percent of that price?
And he wasn't going to sign with the Clippers for 20% of that price. He was never going to do that. So that's the first part. They paid him too much money. Now we'll get to the trade. Thaddeus Young is a good NBA player. Mm-hmm. More importantly, he's a good NBA player who actually guards people.
And fit with that group.
And was a perfect fit next to Nikola Vucevic, who struggles to guard people. And I like the initial idea when the DeMar DeRozan for signed a trade to Chicago first came up. The original thing that floated around, Brian, I think, was the first person to report it on the Jump, but it had floated around for a couple of days, was some sign and trade deal involving DeMar and Lowry Marketing. In that context, I really like the move for the Bulls a lot, because DeMar is a good fit for them. He basically is going to be their half court point guard, because Lonzo Ball, while really good, struggles in the half court to create offense. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that with DeMar, and he's an excellent defensive player. So he's a good fit with Zach LaVine, who struggles at that end of the court. Like, that all made sense. But now you take Thad Young off this team, who's a good player, and you trade a first round pick when you're already out two first round picks from the trade that McMahon immediately questioned back in March for Nick Vucevic. Now the Bulls cannot trade a first round pick until 2029, a pick they're not allowed to trade right now, because they have traded three first round picks in the span of 5 months for Nick Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan, two sub all-star good players. I know Nick Vucevic made the all-star team, but he's a sub all-star player. He's a very good player. He's not an all-star. He's just not. He's a really good player, but he's not an all-star level player. He's not a top five center in the NBA. He's not. No one would argue with that.
Yeah.
So they've now traded three first round picks for two guys that are in their 30s, don't play defense, and are not true all-star level players, to try to entice Zach LaVine to stay with the Bulls. When I got asked in a 5-on-5 where I rank the Bulls in the East after these moves, top what? I said top 12. I think there's a real chance the Bulls could miss the play-in tournament, let alone miss the playoffs. Now
I think they're a playoff team, which they haven't been in five years. I was going to say
top eight. But
just think about it. I'll go through it really quick. I think there's five teams who are clearly better than them. But again, this is assuming health. We have to assume that at the beginning. Brooklyn, in some order: Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, Atlanta, and Philly. I think those five teams are better than the Bulls.
Without question.
There's three teams that are definitely, I think, worse than the Bulls: Detroit, Cleveland, and Orlando. Then you've got the other seven teams in the East. You got Chicago, Boston, the Knicks, the Raptors, the Wizards, the Pacers, the Hornets. And I'm blanking on the other team.
The Hornets have had a decent offseason.
The Hornets, there's an eighth team. No, those are the seven teams. Never mind. Yeah. There's seven teams: Boston, Chicago, New York, Toronto, Washington, Charlotte, Indiana. You can make a case. To me, it's far easier to make a case the Bulls are worse than all of those teams than the Bulls are better than all those teams.
I'll put it this way. Even if you're highly optimistic about the Bulls, What are the odds of them winning a playoff series over the next few years?
Next to none.
Very slim. And so there's a pretty firm ceiling on the Bulls, and you've given up a lot of assets. So, you know,
it's interesting. I obviously the DeRozan thing is interesting, because I just don't think he had anything else in that neighborhood, you know, because $28 million a year.
And to your point, and to your guys, to your point, McMahon, DeMar is a good player. It's not about getting DeMar. It's about the price in money and future assets for getting DeMar in that circumstance. It doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, I've talked about why I don't understand why the Pelicans let Lonzo go, but they obviously had a reasons. They had their reasons why they did. They have more information on Lonzo than any other team. And they made that decision, I think, a while ago. I think they decided a while ago.
Like they were trying to get rid of him last year.
So anyway, I think the interesting thing is LaVine. To me, this is about LaVine because LaVine, not only did he, as he elevated as a player, I feel that he has acquitted himself very well with Team USA. He has looked very good at times. I am impressed with him. And I think his trajectory will continue to go up. And I spoke to him. I did this story. I know it got lost in the news cycle a little bit because it happened the morning of free agency. He was talking about how he's like, I've earned my respect, which is like, you know, give me the, and you know, the Bulls had a choice to go and acquire players versus use cap space because he won't extend at this, at his current contract. He's below market value if he extends now. So the only way to do it was to give him more money this year and raise him up. So, and I realize that's a difficult thing to do that, you know, normally you would say, well, I don't want to give guys on my roster who are under contract more money so I can't bring in players. You want to improve your roster. I understand why they went that way, but just know that when they did that, that was with Zach LaVine saying, I want my respect. And
Zach Lowe has his respect.
He does. He does. Not if you ask him, but you know, I'm just to say that, you know, people are always asking me like, well, who's recruiting who here in the bubble or whatever, like who's Draymond going to get for the Warriors?
Who Draymond have lunch with?
Right. And like, I'm not saying that anybody is recruiting Zach LaVine, but one thing that I will say is that Zach LaVine being on this team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw a stat that I don't have verified, but I saw a stat that Zach LaVine is on the first 4-game win streak since he was at UCLA.
I know this.
The Timberwolves and Bulls never had a 4-game win streak. I mean, is that possible? That can't be possible, right?
Gotta get stats and info on that one. I'm too lazy to look it up.
Stats and info confirmed that stat is accurate.
Jesus.
He's never won 4 straight NBA games.
I just want you to think about this. So this is the world he's lived in. He's lived in a world where he's been on losing teams. There was a time where he was kind of a losing player. He is not a losing player
anymore. Dude, last year he averaged 27-5, 27-plus points, 4.9 assists. He was a 50-40-85 guy, basically.
He was a great player last year. He made huge steps forward.
I am really, really high. And I agree that sometimes he goes space head on defense. I understand that. And you can come up with clips on that. But
guess what? Go down the list of 27 plus point per game scorers and find me the one who doesn't.
Okay. So I'm just saying that Zach is now in a world here where he is playing alongside a bunch of NBA champions and a bunch of real high level players. And I know that this Team USA is flawed mostly because they just haven't had time together, but this team is loaded with players. Okay. And Zach LaVine is living in this world where he is now seeing what it's like to be surrounded by studs. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Draymond Green is recruiting him or whatever, but I'm saying that his eyes are being opened to a new world with Team USA. And I think he's going to go back to the Bulls after this experience and have a different mindset of what being around great players is. And I think that his horizon is going to be higher and he is not going to have an extension and he is going to head towards unrestricted free agency. And so I would just say that I'm not 100% certain that these Bulls moves combined with what he's experienced this summer have guaranteed that he's going to be a Bull long-term. Now, that doesn't mean that when next summer comes and they whip out a 5-year max offer, which he even, he's not, he is Supermax eligible, right? Because he was traded on
if he makes All NBA, he'll be Supermax eligible. Yes.
It's not completely out of the realm of possibility he can make All NBA.
No.
So,
I'd say the Bulls, better hope I'm wrong. Because if they're fighting for 10th and finish 11th or 12th next year, or lose in the first game of the play-in tournament as a 10 seed or something, that's not going to be great for their odds of re-signing the guy.
One of the Bulls' options was to lock down Zach LaVine this summer. They could have done it. He was, based on what he said, I do think he was ready to extend. He said, I like Chicago, but I want my respect. And they elected to go a different route. Doesn't mean that that's wrong route, but Zach LaVine is not locked down. That's all.
Yeah. So we talked about the Russ fit. Given that, what do we think about the Lakers free agency? I mean, I felt like their late stuff was, you've got the advantage of guys wanting to play with stars in LA and all that kind of stuff. But I thought they got some pretty good bang for the buck late.
I actually, their free agency, I think they did pretty well. I'm comfortable with the signings that they've made. And also, I know everybody's making fun of their age. They did sign 3 20-year-old guys. I'll just go back to what I've said from the moment the trade happened. This is a team that won a championship with defense, and they have flushed their defensive team and their defensive system. They flushed some of it when they traded out JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard for
Got Dwight back, baby.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess. And now they took round like, three. Their wing players. It took like their KCP is a really good, he was a contributor on the wing as a 3-and-D player. And they flush those guys, so they've completely gone away from the bones of the system that won them the championship, and that is to me the more thing is, you're now going to be playing with a team that is going to have a lot of minus defenders on. I know how Bontemps feels about it. Bontemps has just said the Wizards got better by trading Westbrook, so.
We've talked about the Westbrook. What they did in free agency.
Yeah, they did a good job. I mean, look, if you're going to have 10 minimum guys on your team, right? Like, they went out and signed some good minimum players, but
which you better do if you're the Lakers and you have LeBron and all these other guys. There's a clear advantage.
Sure, of course, but at the same time,
that Miami also has to a certain degree.
No, for sure. But look, Wayne Ellington, solid minimum signing. Carmelo Anthony, that might be an okay minimum signing at this point. But you're talking about playing Carmelo Anthony is their seventh man. Like, Carmelo is not going to be able to guard people at the highest level in the playoffs. That's going to be a problem. They need Trevor Ariza to still be a quality NBA defensive player. He looked overmatched in the Bucks series in the first round for the Heat. They did a good job. Kendrick Nunn was a good signing for the Tax MLE. I like that move for them. It's a little bit of an awkward fit as far as shooting goes, but he's a good fit. But they signed Malik Monk. The Charlotte Hornets weren't willing to give Malik Monk a qualifying offer.
I like Monk as a flyer, and he's a guy who I think a lot of teams should have been interested in as a kind of a reclamation project.
He's a fine flyer. But again, we're talking about a team that's trying to win a title.
Right.
And people are lauding the Malik Monk signing as this is a huge signing for the Lakers. That sort of just sums up where the Lakers are at. It's a good move to get him for the minimum. I'm not saying it's not, but it goes back to the original thing. The Westbrook thing and these are intertwined because, to your point, McMahon, they did a nice job at these signings, but they have to sign 10 of them because they wouldn't pay Alex Caruso, who they could have paid and didn't get a huge deal. And they're likely not bringing back Dennis Schroeder because they've got a pretty hefty tax bill for the Lakers, even though other teams are paying a lot more and the Lakers print money.
The Bulls will find a way to sign and trade them, give them $85 million.
They did do a good job. For what they're working with on the minimum market, they did a good job filling it out. But I just think it's just going to be hard. If you're going through a season where you're trying to mix and match with these guys that are on minimum contracts for a reason, it's just going to be tricky. And it still doesn't solve the fact that they don't have consistent shooting. And to Brian's point, this team has been built on defense and they do not look like they're going to guard anybody. They're putting a ton of pressure on Frank Vogel, as the Bulls are in Billy Donovan, because the Bulls don't look like they're going to be able to guard a paper bag either. So those two coaches have a ton of work to do to make those teams good enough defensively.
Unless there's been an unannounced contract extension, which sometimes happens with coaches. It happens with executives all the time. I think Frank Vogel's in the last year of his contract.
That is correct.
So that's Frank, make this work or else.
Make it work, buddy.
So I don't think the Pelicans are done yet. I believe they still have some cap space. I believe
they still have Josh Hart sitting out there as a restricted free agent too.
Right. And they still haven't actually done the Devontae Graham sign and trade. So there could possibly be, and they could expand that sign and trade.
They still got a bunch of picks to throw around all willy nilly.
There's been some rumbling about possibly maybe they could do a deal with Toronto to acquire Goran Dragic, who Griff has a long-term relationship with, and now coaching consultant, now associate with the organization, Mike D'Antoni, who has a history with Dragic. So,
who is publicly saying over, in Slovenia, basically, hey, I'd love to play with Luka in Dallas.
Right. Well, of course he would. The Mavericks don't really have a trade? I mean, I brought this up to Bontemps the other day. I asked about, Canadian Dwight Powell, but I don't think.
Well, the Raptors, while we've been doing the podcast, the Raptors, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, signed Canadian center Kem Birch. So I don't believe they'll be trading for another center.
Yeah. And Dwight Powell is also uniquely tight with Mark Cuban and other high ranking officials in the Mavericks organization. And look, I've been told that the Mavericks like Goran Dragic, but don't want to pay him $19 million this year.
Okay. So that's a possibility. I've heard a couple of rumors out there about Josh Hart's, Josh Hart could still stay, but I've heard some rumors out there about where Josh Hart could go in a sign and trade. So they do have some irons in the fire. Valanciunas, I think Valanciunas makes sense. I think Valanciunas wants an extension.
Don't we all?
So that's the thing. They traded for Steven Adams and gave him an extension last year, and that ended up not working out.
Yeah.
So I do like Valanciunas for them. The Athletic reported that the Hornets are looking at a possible sign and trade with Lauri Markkanen. I do not think Lowry. I mentioned in a podcast earlier this week that I could see Lowry coming back on the qualifying offer with the Bulls. I have been told that that will absolutely not happen. Although, in restricted free agency, when you get into restricted free agency stalemates, is happening with Markkanen, sometimes teams take positions that seem entrenched and then they come out of them.
I was told when I was sniffing on something that the Bulls are not eager to trade him.
Yeah. The story goes that the story that I was told was that the Bulls basically decided they didn't want him in the Spurs sign and trade. But I would just say that if the Spurs wanted Lauri Markkanen enough, they had salary cap space. They could have just signed to an offer sheet directly.
If the Spurs wanted Lauri Markkanen, he'd be a Spur.
I do think they want him. I just don't know if they could agree on the terms of all.
If it got to a point, if the Spurs wanted him and could get a deal, like he would have been in the deal if it would have worked. The Bulls would have rather traded him than that young, I'm sure.
Well, they probably would have traded him without having to trade a first round pick as well to get off Aminu. But New Orleans, I do think, has some interest possibly in Markkanen. New Orleans isn't done, but I'm not blown away impressed by
As of now, the Pelicans are losers. I mean, they turned Lonzo Ball into first into Thomas Adoransky, Garrett Temple, and Devontae Graham. They got worse. Like, that's just not good enough. Now, that could change. maybe they still have things to do. But as of today, I think they got worse. And as we all know, they have a year to prove to Zion Williamson that they're going to be a playoff team and some sort of factor in the West. And I think this week has caused them to take a step back in that pursuit. So that's bad.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I'll say is I do think that Buddy Hield is still available on the market because they were ready to trade him to the Lakers. There's a possibility that Buddy Hield could be on the move this offseason. And I could actually see scenarios where Buddy Hield would make sense in New Orleans. So
Buddy Hield makes a lot of money, but he makes sense a lot of places because he has other faults, but he is a lockdown shooter. Yeah, or a knockdown shooter, I should say.
And like with that, with every contract that looks really rich when it's signed every year, it looks a little bit more reasonable.
And that one descends. Goes down every year. So
as I've talked to executives, Bontemps pointed this out. I totally missed on. You're right. That does descend. That's important. Number one. Number two. The league put out a salary cap projection for next year. The cap has been flat because of COVID. They put out a salary cap projection next year of $119 million, which will be a $7 million increase.
The initial projection was it would be $115 million, just for context.
Yeah. And so, look, we got stuff going on in this country, in this world. I don't know where we're going to be with attendance when it all comes down to it. But I was talking to a couple of executives this week, and they were like, people are looking at these contracts like the cap is going to stay flat. It's not. So before we go, I just want to real quick touch on Kawhi Leonard. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is the situation that the Clippers are in with Kawhi. Another way to put it, using poker terms, which I use a lot talking about the NBA, is they're pot committed. They've already got so much in the Kawhi pot that I think it's going to be hard for them to not continue to put into there. And so, I mean, it is absolutely brutal for them that Kawhi would opt out of his contract instead of extending. You know, that hurts their long-term planning. That it cost them the $9.5 million injured player exception, which they could have used this year to aid this team to do something with this season. I mean, they're not just going to shut down and not play this season. You know, they don't have control of their pick, right? I mean, their pick is out of their control.
The Thunder have it.
So they've got to play. They've got to continue to try, and him opting out hurt them. And I understand that Kawhi has got to look out for Kawhi. It's been 1 trillion percent clear that that's what he's going to do. You knew that when you signed him.
there's a trend there.
But at some level, there's got to be a partnership with the team. At some level, there has to be. Otherwise, you're never going to succeed. And so, I mean, I'd love to know what Steve Ballmer is really thinking. He's got to be like, I can't believe this guy opted out, and I can't believe that he's, you know, potentially talking to other people, you know, when we're going to pay him $40 million to rehab, and especially if he's only going to want to sign a 1-year deal and put our necks back on the line next year. I mean, I can just see how it's been very frustrating, but McMahon, the Clippers are so, like, I don't see how they pull the ripcord. I think they got to give him what he wants and just wait for him to get healthy, because he's so freaking good that you just play the long game there.
And no, Kawhi has all the leverage, and he's clearly going to use it however, however he sees fit. But no, there's no options there. So he'll leave him twisting as long as he wants to leave him twisting.
Well, there are options, Bontemps. They could investigate a sign and trade possibility, but
they could. But
there's no realistic options there.
Okay, that's a fair statement.
I mean it. Yeah, I mean, you know, this sort of reminds me of didn't LeBron sign in like August after he won the title in 2016?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's exactly, it's obviously not a completely analogous situation, but it sort of feels like that, where this isn't like 2019 to me, where like we spent a week waiting to see what was going to happen because all these teams were waiting to see what was going to happen. To Tim's point, McMahon's point, everybody spent all their money. Miami was seen as maybe Kawhi will go to Miami, maybe he'll go to New York. Well, all these teams spent all their money and did all this stuff. So,
well, there is one team out there.
Well, even I assume you're referring to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Even for Philadelphia, I mean, they can do it, but it'll be a little tricky for them now that they've signed Danny Green. I mean, they'd have to really try to shift some money around to get that done, because if they sign Kawhi, he makes a bunch more than Ben Simmons. So if you would do a Ben Simmons for a Kawhi trade, you'd have to try to include some other money in it. It'd be fairly complicated. So, I mean, because they'd be hard capped and they'd be up against a hard cap. So.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's signed their contracts yet, though. Well, no, yeah, I mean, true. Look, I mean, we're behind. Maybe this has already played out behind the scenes and it's already over with.
Yeah, it just feels like the way this has played out, the only thing we have to wonder about at this point is what kind of contract Kawhi is going to sign with the Clippers. Now, maybe I will end up looking very stupid and they'll do a sign and trade in the next 12 hours. But, you know,
I went on a low post and we talked about, Oklahoma City never does buyouts. the next day, Kemba's bought out in New York.
Yeah.
Well, they don't usually. You weren't wrong.
No, it's the first time they've done it. But yeah, it just feels like that's sort of the way this is going. And sort of like we waited to find out what Kawhi's knee situation was going to be and whether he was having surgery and what the situation was. And it took, 2 months for that to come out. Feels like this is going to be or 6 weeks to come out. This feels like it's just going to sort of inevitably be the same sort of timeline where Kawhi is going to do this on whatever timeline he wants to do it.
All right. Well, the Clippers are probably pretty frustrated right now. So
I would imagine Jackson is probably a little frustrated right now, because it feels like that situation is maybe tied to Kawhi's situation being unresolved in some form.
Right. Well, both Reggie Jackson and Dennis Schroeder are sort of point guards with where the music has kind of stopped here and they don't have chairs.
The only difference is that it's always sort of felt like Reggie Jackson was going back to the Clippers like Nick Batum did. And it's sort of, to me at least, it seems like it's just, what is the deal going to be? He's very tight with Paul George. They're still going to try to be competitive next year. They have early bird rights. You would think they're going to get something done. Dennis Schroeder does not seem like he's going back to the Lakers under any circumstances.
No.
We'll see what his situation turns out to be.
Yeah. I mean, Dennis Schroeder there's no real cap space out there. So Dennis Schroeder is now looking for an exception.
Is there any cap space in China?
You know what? There's actually not, because right now the Chinese are not signing foreign players. So the answer to that is no.
Could go back to Europe, maybe.
I mean, he's going to be in the NBA.
I know just, he is. I'm making a joke.
You know,
he needs a Nikola Mirotic Barcelona deal to come in as a Hail Mary. The Barcelona can't sign Lionel Messi, so they're not going to be signing Dennis Schroeder, I don't think.
Well, maybe you could think they got more money to spend now.
That's true. They're clearing money to sign Dennis Schroeder to pair him with Nikola Mirotic, the new dream team in Barcelona. You heard it here first.
All right.
Podcast has gotten messy. Let's end it.
Thank you for listening. Thankless to the Hoop Collective. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon, who's still on vacation. Thank you to Jackson, to our producer. Have a great weekend, everybody. Next time we talk, hopefully I'll be in the United States. Or
adios,
I'll be
amigos.
In like hard quarantine in Tokyo.
Instead of adios amigos, how do you say goodbye in Japanese?
Sayonara.
Sayonara, duh. I'm trilingual. Adios amigos and sayonara. But how do you say friends? We'll figure that out later. See you, boys.